You're listening to another great Torah class, recorded by TorahAnytime.com.
When I told people that I'm coming to Hillcrest tonight and that there will be hundreds of people here tonight, not one person believed me. But I'm just telling you, I am so awed that just less than a week from Yontif, so many of you would come to hear a talk, hopefully of inspiration, L'zeicha Nishmas, David. This talk tonight is literally going all around the world. One of the greatest organizations that we have in Klal Yisrael today is called TorahAnytime.com. So I want to say to my friends in Chile, in Mexico, Australia, and Switzerland, there's no place like Hillcrest. And everybody can be proud of this community that they would come out to hear Divrei Torah on a night when so many of us are so busy and could have found a very convenient excuse. If we think about what has gone on since last year, Pesach, we know that Klal Yisrael has had a very, very difficult year. Perhaps one of the most difficult years in decades. Perhaps it all started with Naftali, Gilad, and Ayal, when those three holy children were kidnapped and then eventually lost their lives. And then it continued with the Gaza War and the Shrek Lecha Harigais in Hanov, and then a few weeks ago in France. And although it's at a different scale, a different reason altogether, but still, how could your heart not go out for the Sasson family of what happened last Friday night? And then here tonight, we come to commemorate the Yahrzeit of a precious child, a 20-year-old boy who passed away literally within a week of a terrible illness. So this is a night, besides that we will talk about the Yontif of Pesach and how to prepare for it and the significance of the Yontif, but it's a night for Chizuk. It's a night to give ourselves strength. And I want to share with you something that I spoke literally less than a week ago in France. I was asked to come to France. I spoke in front of 1,000 people in a huge auditorium last Sunday afternoon. And most people, when I told them that I was going to France, you would think I was telling them I was going to Gaza. Everybody was terrified. How in the world could you walk in the streets in France? I can just tell you that in front of every shul and in front of every school, and I spoke in places called Rancy, Sassel, and Jenny, all these places of yeshivas and Beis Yaakovs, besides the huge auditorium in Paris. Of course, there's a tremendous amount of army personnel and police personnel, but Yiddishkeit is flourishing. Yiddishkeit is flourishing. Hundreds of thousands and thousands of boys and girls learning in yeshivas and girls' schools, incredible. If you would see that auditorium, the Rabbonim, and the enthusiasm and the excitement for Torah and Yerushalayim, it's just unimaginable what's going on there. But yet, of course, people are afraid, just like they are afraid all over. And I want to share with you what I told them, because I think it's appropriate. It's a way of chizuk. It occurred to me once that the word echad, Aleph Ches Dalet, is begematria 13. But there's another word that's equal 13 as well, and that's Ava, love. And it occurred to me, of course, that what's the reason why both Ava and Echad are equal, the same gematria? Because if two people love each other, they become like one. Two friends love each other, they become like one mindset. So Ava and Echad make sense that they have the same gematria. But as I was preparing for the people in France, it occurred to me that there's another word that also equals 13. And that word is daiga, dalid, aleph, gimel, hey. Worry, concern. And I told them that a few Fridays ago, all of us here in America, when we heard what was going on outside that supermarket, that kosher supermarket, we all worried for them. We all felt like one with them. We davened and we cried for them. And that is a sign of Achdus. It's a great sign of Achdus. And I told them, I want you to know that I come from America with a message that we love you and we care for you and we are here for you. Because we all have Ava and we all feel Echad. And I think that's the same thing, that if 6 years after David passed away, we could have such a crowd That's what we say to the Ruttenstrach family as well. We love you. We care for you. We're still inspired by David's smile, his friendship, and his Avas HaTorah. How many people could foster that because of them, this beautiful Sefer should be written, Tzemach David? What a beautiful, beautiful title, as we'll talk about it in a moment. Tzemach David really refers to Mashiach. Tzemach David really refers to the ultimate redemption. There could be no better name for a Sefer written L'Zecha Nishmas, this young tzaddik. And I want to share with you a story that is very painful and very personal to me. And it happened to me many, many years ago. I was only 21, and my father, Nebuch, had Yena Machla. I see Rabbi Simon here. I believe Rabbi Simon even knew my father as a Moyel. And when I was 21, I realized what was happening, and he was dying. And one Shabbos, he was in a hospital in Washington Heights, and my brother Rav Kalman and I were with Rav Schwab for Shabbos, because the hospital was only a few blocks away. We davened in the Kehillah, and after Musaf, my brother and I went to the hospital, and then we came back to eat the Suda of Shabbos with Rav Schwab. And Rav Schwab said to me, "How's your father?" And I said to him, "I have betochen that he'll be well." And he became very stern with me, and he taught me a lesson that I have never forgotten. Now, it was hard to listen to what he said, but he said as follows. He said, "Betochen does not mean that your father is going to get well. Betochen does not mean that things work out exactly the way you want them to work out. Betochen means that there's a master plan. Hashem has a plan, and hopefully one day you'll be able to understand it." And recently, when I gave the Haskara on Rav Schwab, he passed away 20 years ago, I read from one of his speeches. And this is something that as Klal Yisrael, individuals, families, and Klal Yisrael go through tzaras, we must know and understand what Rav Schwab writes about betochen. The Chazon Ish writes that betochen is not the firm conviction that our wishes will be granted by Hashem. Betochen does not mean that our hopes will be fulfilled. Rather, betochen is the firm conviction that Hashem Yisbarach is watching over us. He knows all our tzaras. He knows our worries, our thoughts, and he listens to our tefillos. And things happen because he wants them to happen. And that's why we need each other. That's the importance of a kinos. We'll never understand all these difficult tragedies until Mashiach comes. Only at that time will we somehow see all the pieces of the puzzle fitting together. But until then, we need each other. That's the ava, that's the achdus, and that's the daiga, the worry that we have for each other. And by coming here, L'Zecha Nishmas David, and L'Zecha Nishmas Naftali, Gilad, Ayal, and all those that Nebuch lost their lives only because they were Yidden, what a schus it is for them, and what chizuk it is for all of us to know that life goes on, and it could only go on when we care for each other and are there for each other. I'll just tell you this. You know, I wouldn't even be able to say this except that a Gemara says this. And if the Gemara wouldn't say it, how in the world could we say such a thing? But you take a look at the Gemara, Bava Basra, Tezayin Amar Aleph, and we all know that Eiv had so much tzaras. Omar Eiv, the Gemara in Bava Basra, Tezayin Amar Aleph tells us, he said, "Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Shema Ruach Sa'ara Ovra Lefanecha, maybe there was a whirlwind and you got mixed up. V'nischalev ben Oyev le'iyuv, I'm not your enemy. My name is not spelled Oyev. Aleph Vav Yud Beis, I'm Eiv. Aleph Yud Vav Beis, I'm your friend. How could you do this to me?" So if Eiv could ask that question, we could all ask that question. What in the world is going on? Hashem, how could you be doing these things? But Hashem gives him an answer. And this is an answer that gives us a perspective of what life is all about. Hashem says to Iyov in Perek Lamed Ches Pasuk Dalet, Eifai ha-yisa b'yos di-yaretz. Where were you when I started the world? Hagei, you tell me, im yodati bina, if you're so smart. And what the Gemara is teaching us, it's like somebody who walks into a shir, in the middle of the shir, and asks the Rebbe a question. And the Rebbe says, my child, if you would have come on time, you would understand what you're talking about. You can't walk into the middle of a play and ask, what's going on here? And listen to this pshat that the Chofetz Chaim says, you could almost say it's adorable. We all say this in Ashrei. I have it underlined in my Siddur because this is so striking what he said. We all say this three times a day. Shemer Hashem es kol hayavov. Hashem loves all, protects all who he loves. V'es kol harishayim. And all the Rishayim Yashmid he wipes out. Now, watch this, the Chofetz Chaim says. Imagine a guy comes late to shul. So he misses the first words of the Pasuk. This is what he hears. Es kol hayavov, all who he loves, v'es kol harishayim Yashmid. All who he loves, and all the Rishayim he wipes out. Hey, God, what are you doing? Excuse me, sir, you walked in late. You were born in the 1940s or the 1930s. You weren't born at the beginning of the world. You don't understand the whole plan. And what happens if a guy leaves early in shul? This is what he hears. Shemer Hashem es kol hayavov v'yaskol harishayim. Hashem loves and protects all who he loves and all the Rishayim. Hey, God, what are you doing? Excuse me, sir, you died early. You know, the end of the story hasn't been written yet. So we only live a short time. 70, 80, 90 years is a speck in the span of a lifetime. And so therefore we cannot know. And so therefore, again, we come to give each other chizuk. And you know something? Again, I want to quote Rav Schwab. Only because, by the way, I must thank Aryeh for telling me about the Sefer. I didn't know about it. Aryeh Schlosselberg, I thank him so much. He comes from the most wonderful family. By the way, he just had a nephew this Shabbos. But I can't do the bris because it's Yontif and with me. But I'm going to give Rabbi Weiss my car tomorrow. I'll tell you that. Took a while to catch on, right? He's getting married. Doesn't he need a moil eventually? But let me tell you something so beautiful that Rav Schwab says. A Semach David, right? That's what this sefer is called, Semach David. So Rav Schwab on prayer, which is a fabulous sefer that you should get. He writes, Mashiach is called the sprout of David, Semach David. Why? Because just like a seed germinating in the ground, the process of Bias Mashiach is a slow but steady one. Just as a tiny seed gradually grows bit by bit until it breaks through the ground and develops into a fully grown tree, so is the coming of Mashiach, an ongoing and slow developing process which will not stop until Bias Mashiach becomes a reality. So Tzemach David, it's a long time in coming. Just like a flower blossoms very, very slowly. I remember when I was a kid, my father got us a video from the National Geographic. Those of you who remember National Geographic. So they had a video about how a flower grows. And they took it every few days. And of course, they sped up the video and you see the flower blossoming. But that's not how it happens. It takes a long time. And listen to what Rav Schwab writes. Just as one would water a plant to make it grow, so does the Tzemach David, which is Mashiach, develop and grow as a result of the tears of those who mourn over Tzion and Yerushalayim. A flower grows because it's watered. Mashiach is going to come if we cry for him, if we really mourn over Tzion and Yerushalayim, and are continually mispalel for Binyan Yerushalayim and Bias HaMashiach. This Sefer goes a long way towards that, because this is Torah, this is Yerushalayim, and it should bring the Tzemach David closer to all of us. I want to share with you a story that happened at a Seder a number of years ago that struck me to the core. It struck me to the core because it was emotional when it happened, but it was so unexpected. I was sitting at a Seder, and I give all of you a bracha. You should be zeicha to sit at a Seder with children and grandchildren. There's nothing like it. I was at the head of the table, and my grandson, who today is 20, but at that time he was 3. His name is Avram, named after my father, so I know that I have a special love for him. And you know, a 3-year-old kid cannot follow the Seder. He's running from the kitchen to the dining room, back and forth. And the Seder is going on. And just as we are about to begin singing V'hisha Amda, my grandson comes in and he says, "Zaidi, can I sit on your lap?" Well, anybody here who's a Zaidi knows that your little grandson wants to sit on your lap. What's the question? Of course. So I pick him up, I put him on my left lap. I'm a righty, so I have to hold the kais in my right hand. And I'm holding the kais, and we all start singing V'hisha Amda. We start singing V'hisha Amda, and suddenly I start looking at the words, maybe in a way that I never looked at them before, because, you know, my dear precious grandson was sitting on my lap, and all of a sudden I start to cry. I couldn't say the words. And everybody's looking at me, you know, I'm at the head of the table. How could you cry when you're singing V'hisha Amda? I mean, it's a happy time of the Seder. Everybody sings it together. And, you know, the more you try not to cry, the more you're crying. I can't look at everyone, and the tears are coming down my cheeks. And the reason that I was crying was because I said these words. Not only one nation is trying to get rid of us. In every generation, they're trying to get rid of us. And I was thinking, Rabbi Shalom, we've lost 6 million. We've lost so many in Eretz Yisrael. We've lost so many in so many countries. Isn't it enough? And the Baal HaGadol is telling us it never stops. And I'm thinking, what's in the future for this child and the kids of his generation? It doesn't end. I took hold of myself. I was able to finish the Seder, but it wasn't the same. After the Seder, I took out, everybody was already upstairs, I took out every single Haggadah I had. I had to get some consolation. What in the world is the Baal HaGadol telling us? And then I saw something from the Chidah, and he says something amazing. He says, what does the Baal HaGadol mean? This is not really so. Look at us. Okay, he doesn't mention America, but he was talking about different countries. We had 100,000 people at MetLife Stadium celebrating Yassim HaShas. 2 weeks ago, I don't know if you know this, in Barclay Center in Brooklyn, there were 12,000 girls and teachers from all over the country celebrating the 80th yard site of Sarah Schneer. Baruch Hashem, we're gathering together. We have Kollels, Beis Yaakov, schools. There are many free countries where Klal Yisrael is flourishing. England, Canada, Switzerland, America. Look at this. What is the Baal HaGadol telling us? And he said something amazing. He said, it's not always the sword, but it's the smile. Because in America, Jennifer can belong to any country club. And Justin can get into any bank and go into any college. And so therefore, there are no barriers. There are no barriers. We can do anything in America. And because we can do anything in America, and America smiles at us, there's more intermarriage today than there ever was. It's not because they're killing us in America, just the opposite. The smile is dangerous. The sword is dangerous, and the smile is dangerous. That's what the Baal HaGadol is telling us. You can't let your guard down. Now, you would not believe this. The day Chol HaMoed, the first day Chol HaMoed that year, I had a bris of all places in Long Island called Mount Sinai. Okay? The father was a guy by the name of Napolitano, a Goyish Italian guy. The mother was Jewish. And the grandparents, of course, wanted to have a bris. Their grandchild is Jewish, right? Unfortunately, the son-in-law is a Goy, but after all, it's a Jewish child. So we did the bris, and then I turn around after the bris on the table. I wish I would have had that camera right there when I was there. You wouldn't believe it. There was a blue box of Horowitz Margaret and Matzahs. There was a box of bagels. And right next to was a platter of cheese, and then there was a platter of meat. Every isser that you could think of. Chametz, matzah, basa, b'chalav, alzdorten. And I'm thinking, what does God say about a bris like this? Was Eliyahu HaNavi here today? How did this happen? How did this happen? You know how it happened? Because of the smile, not because of the sword. Because these two, Napolitano and his wife, whatever, where do you think they met? In a bar someplace? Because the Jews could go to any bar. So that's what we have to be careful about. That's what the Baal HaGadah is telling us. But recently I heard a fabulous pshat. A fabulous pshat, and if you could write it down, it's kedai. It's worth it to say over at the Seder. Listen to this ingenious pshat that a mekubal, Rav Gamliel, said in Eretz Yisrael. How he teaches the words. He's talking about Klal Yisrael being destroyed, and he writes, and he says like this, Shaloi Echad, if we are not with the Echad, which is Hashem himself, Belvad, that's the only thing that is Amar Aleinu L'chalei Seinu. No nation can get rid of us. They threw us out of Spain, they threw us out of Portugal, they threw us out of Poland, Morocco, all these places, but we outlasted all of them. Shaloi Echad, if we don't have a connection to Hashem, oh, Belvad, that alone is Amar Aleinu L'chalei Seinu. No nation, no ISIS, no Hamas, nothing. They're not going to get rid of us. They may kill some, and they'll terrorize, but we'll be here forever. As long as we have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Tzemach David is all about. That's what David understood. That's why he ran away from the table to learn, to make his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what he understood, and that's what his friends understood. That's the thing that keeps us for generations. So that's the first lesson. The first lesson of Yontif is to make a commitment to every mitzvah that we can, every anhaga of Klal Yisrael, every barrier, every mechitza that we could make to the outside world, and know that the smile is so dangerous. Of course, many people feel, we don't want to live in a ghetto. Nobody's telling you to live in a ghetto. But just remember, in America, there's more intermarriage than there ever was, because we're freer than we ever were. And there's a price to pay. Freedom, there's a price to pay for freedom. Let me tell you another lesson that I think that we have to learn. There's a very, very interesting Rashi. In Shemois Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Zayin, it tells us, Ushmartem es hamatzais. You should watch the matzais. Now, we all know that in the Torah, there are no nekudais, there are no vowels. So there are many words that can be read differently as long as you use the same letters. And so therefore, the Gemara Darshan's Rashi brings it that Ushmartem, not only es hamatzais, but es hamitzvais. It's the same letters, mem, tzadik, vav, tav. You could either read it matzais or mitzvais. And Rashi tells us, you have to make sure that you do make the matzahs, you bake them quickly, right? We all know within 18 minutes. So Rabbi Yoshia says, don't read it matzahs, you can also read it mitzvahs. Kederech shein machmitzin es hamatzahs, just like you don't delay when you come to bake matzahs. Kach ein machmitzin es hamitzvahs. Don't delay if you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah. Ela im bo liyodcho aseh yosomiyah. Do it right away. Don't delay. So many times we have the opportunity to do a chesed for someone or to do a mitzvah and we delay. Don't delay. Do it right away. That's a lesson that we have to learn as we prepare for Yontif. Now I want to tell you about a shul. I'm not going to say where it is, but somebody called me a while ago and asked me to come to do a bris for him. And I said, what shul do you want to do it in? He said, well, we can't do it in my shul. I said, why not? He said, because I daven with the matzah minion. I said, the what? He said, yeah, we finish in less than 18 minutes. So of course he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed that to have a bris, that his family should come and see that that's how they daven. And we're not talking about zrizas like that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about an opportunity that you have to do a mitzvah and that you don't delay, you do it right away. And I'll tell you something amazing. One of the places that I have the schus to travel to is in Antwerp. And there's a wonderful Rav there, a Rosh Hashiva. His name is Rabbi Yehuda Traeger. And he once told me something very interesting on a pasuk in Tillim. In Kuf Yud Tes, which is the largest perek of Tillim, it has 8 psukim of Aleph, 8 psukim of Beis, 8 psukim of Gimel. So in the Psukim of Ches, it says like this. David HaMelech said, Chashti, v'loi hismamoti. I hastened, and I didn't delay lishmar mitzvaysecha, to do your mitzvahs. So Rav Traeger asked, if David HaMelech already said, Chashti, I hastened, what do you mean? Why did he have to say, I didn't delay? If you hastened, you didn't delay. So he said, no, because sometimes you see a guy's running for shul. He's running to shul. You think, oh, boy, he wants to get to the minyan. It's a lazy good for nothing. He woke up 20 minutes late. That's why he's rushing. Or somebody's running to work. You say, wow, he's excited to get there. Of course not. He woke up late. So I heard the Baba of a Rebbe once said a tremendous thing. When the alarm clock goes off 20 to 7, you should get there for the 7:30 minyan. That's the kol Yaakov. But when you put your hand on the snooze alarm to sleep another 20 minutes, that's your dayim, your day Esav. So when the alarm goes off, you should be jumping out of bed to do the mitzvah right away. I'll tell you an amazing story. There was a fellow, his name is Yossi Pressburger. Young guy in Flatbush, 47 years old, worked for Kedem Wine, was on a business trip in Detroit. Rachmana Litzlani had a heart attack and he passed away. And they called me to be Menachem Avil, the kids. Many families do that because they know that I lost my father at a young age. I'm the oldest of seven, so I've had some experience dealing with younger children who lose a parent. But then when I came there, I spoke to Mrs. Pressburger. She was in a kitchen. It was very, very crowded, a small kitchen in a house in Flatbush. And then a few days later, somebody called me and told me this remarkable story. That there was a woman who came to be Menachem Avil, Mrs. Pressburger. She didn't really know her well. She knew Yossi's sisters. So she came to be Menachem Avil, the sisters who had come in from Baltimore. So she says to Mrs. Pressburger, tell me something about your husband. I didn't know him. Tell me something about him that I could go away a better person. She said he never delayed doing a mitzvah, especially a chesed. If somebody asked him to do a favor, he did it right away. Fine. She said, I'm okay, Menachem, and she left. She told me she was driving 3 blocks away, East 19th Avenue N, Kamenetz Yeshiva, the corner of Kamenetz Yeshiva. She's at a light. It was right after a snowstorm. Said it was only one lane of traffic. And she sees a woman sleeping in the car. Her head is like cocked to the right a little bit. And she figured it's 3 o'clock. She's probably waiting for her child to come out of school. It's a school day, snow day, probably no buses. But she told me, I had a feeling there was something wrong with that woman. I don't know why. The way her head was back, it just didn't look like a regular person sleeping. So she says, I called Hatzalah and I apologized to Hatzalah. I said, I'm so sorry that I'm calling you, but I think there's a woman in trouble in a car on East 19th and N. And she said, the guy in Hatzalah got so angry, never apologized to Hatzalah, never. Don't feel bad for us. Feel bad maybe for the victim. Don't feel bad for us. Call us anytime. Fine. She apologized. Fine. They said they'll be there in 2 minutes. She told me an hour later, she gets a call. Are you the lady who called Hatzalah for that woman on East 19th? She said, yes. She says, you want to know? You saved her life. So what do you mean? She's a diabetic. She had hypoglycemia. She was in diabetic shock. If she would have been there another 20 minutes, she could have died. She just heard 5 minutes before, don't delay to do a chesed. She did the chesed, she called, and she saved a life. And you know something? You won't believe it. 3 months later, she called me again. She's screaming on the phone. Rabbi Kroll, you won't believe this. You remember me? She tells me, no. I said, of course I remember. She said, you won't believe it. The mother of that woman called me. I really saved 2 lives. That woman was pregnant, and she said she had a girl. I said, you couldn't say she had a boy, but okay. And I didn't. I didn't say that. But you see, you don't delay when it comes to doing a mitzvah. I want to share with you now the greatest vart of all time that I have ever heard on the Haggadah. You must write this down. This is absolutely incredible. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever heard a CD of a man by the name of Rav Isaac Bernstein. Rav Isaac Bernstein had the great, I don't know what a talent. He was born in Ireland and he spoke with an Irish-English accent. And he loved Divrei Torah. So you could imagine, you listen to a CD, and this guy is like flying out of the car because he's just so excited about every Divrei Torah that he says with his British-Irish accent. He was the rabbi in the Fifth Avenue Synagogue for a while, and then he went to England, and Nebuchadnezzar also passed away in his mid-50s. But he said like this, a fabulous, fabulous vort. The Gemara tells us in Psachim Samachei Amud Beis, Yotza Kat Rishoina, the first group of people went out as they did the Korban Pesach, Kol Echad Ve'Echad Noisein Pischoi Ba'oirai, they put it in a leather pouch, Umavshi Le'achoirav, they threw it over their back, and Taka Meni Sfardim, they walk around the Seder table, and they carry something over their back to remember how the Yidden carried the Korban Pesach. Omar Rav Elish said, what do you think those people looked like? Now, you would not believe this. You have to look it up in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Tayois. You know what Rashi says? Soicharim Yishma'elim. Arab merchants. That's what they looked like when they walked out of the Beis HaMikdash with the Korban Pesach over their shoulders. Rav Isaac Bernstein asked, of all the things that we want people to look like Soicharim Yishma'elim? Arab merchants? Why in the world do we want to remember Arab merchants? Great Kasha. Listen to what he says. There's a famous Rishain, Rabbeinu Manoach. Rabbeinu Manoach writes on the Rambam. And on the Rambam, Hilchos Chometz Matzah, Perek Ches, Halacha Beis, Rabbeinu Manoach says something that if we would think about it for 5 years, we'd never come up with it. He says, why do we dip the karpas? Why do we dip the karpas in salt water or whatever we dip it in? He says, you know why? A memory of the Ksenes Pasim. The brothers, remember, they took the Ksenes Pasim and they dipped it in blood and they showed Yaakov that his beloved Yosef was no longer here. So because they dipped the Ksenes Pasim in blood, we dip the karpas in salt water. Now I ask you, what connection is there to that? And that's what Rabbi Isaac Bernstein asked. What connection is that? Now, I'm going to show you something. Now, unless I know that, I don't know how many people here have a Chumash Bereishis in front of them in their seats. Does anybody here have a Chumash Bereishis in front? I just want you to, oh, on his iPad he has it, right. That app. Okay, fine. Good, find it. Find, you need a Rashi. Because you won't believe it. You will not believe this. If you would get a Chumash and you will see this, you mamish have to fasten your seatbelts when you see this Rashi. This is a Rashi in Vayeshev. Bereishis Lamed Zayin Pasuk Gimel. Make sure you bring it to the Seder table because no one will believe it. V'Yisrael, which is Yaakov. Ohav es Yosef. Yisrael loved Yosef mikol banov, from all his children. Ki ben zakonim hulai, this was a child that was born to him in elder years. Va'osalai ksaines pasim. And he made for him a ksaines pasim. Zokt Rashi. I know you're not going to believe this. Rashi says on the ksaines pasim, loshain clay milas. That's like a silk type of material. Kamoi karpas. Rashi says the word karpas on ksaines pasim. Who could find this thing? Only Rabbi Bernstein. And all of us, since first grade, when we learned this Rashi, should have seen it. That's unbelievable. You know what karpas really stands for? Kar is like a karit, a fluffy pillow. Pas is silk or wool. That's what the coat was. It was a fluffy silk type of coat. The ksenes pasim, Rashi says, is karpas. Oh, now we understand. If the Ksenes Pasim is karpas, and they dipped the Ksenes Pasim in blood, we dip the karpas in salt water. You know why? Because the Baal HaGadol is trying to tell us, Rabbi Yisai, wait a second. A whole night you're going to talk about how you got out of Mitzrayim. How'd you get into Mitzrayim? How did that happen? You know what the Baal HaGadol wants to tell us? Before Halach Ma'anya, before Manishtana, before Avodah Mayinu. Wait a second. Look at what the brothers did to each other. With karpas, with the Ksenes Pasim. They dipped it in blood. That's how we got into this mess. because there was no achdus, because there was no togetherness, because brothers who should have got along together didn't get along together. That's what we have to teach our children at the beginning of the Seder. Now watch this. And when I heard this, I still remember where I was on the highway. Who did the brothers sell Yosef to? Yishma'elim. Merchants, Yishma'elim. That's why, Zachrav Isaac Bernstein, we carry it. That's a pshat in the Gemara. Why we carry it like Arab merchants. To remember Rabbeisai, it's not a question of getting out of Mitzrayim. How do we get into Mitzrayim? Because we don't have a meeting like this too often. We should have these all the time. That brings achdus and love and concern and worry for each other. The brothers didn't have that. They weren't worried about what their father would think. They weren't worried about their younger brother. And that's how we got into Mitzrayim. That's why Karpas is first, before, right after we make Kiddush. Because we have to teach our children. That's the message of what Pesach is all about. And that's achdus and love and concern for each other. Here's another thing that is so great. And again, I kept on saying this by the Haskara of Rav Shimon Schwab. The man was such a genius. He saw things that we saw, but he saw them on a deeper level. Watch this. We all sing this in the Seder. Baruch Hamokaim, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shanos and Tertel Yama Yisrael, Baruch Hu. We sing it right before the Arba Bonim. Rav Schwab asked a great kasha. Every time that we use the word Hamokaim as an adjective for Hashem, it's always something sad. We go, Rachmana Litzlan, to be Menachem Avol someone, what do we say to the person? Hamokim Yenachem. What happens if somebody loses money? So what do we tell them? Hamokim Yemalei Chasreinach. Hashem should fill your loss. In Achenu that we say by davening about all those Jews that are stuck in many different places, Hamokim Yerachim Aleihem. Hamokim Yerachim Aleihem. Hashem should have pity and compassion on them. So what's Hamokim doing in the Seder? It's a happy night. What are we saying here, Baruch Hamokim? Right? Hamokim is always used in a sad context. And Rav Schwab says something ingenious. He says that sometimes a father or a mother or a grandparent is sitting at the Seder and they look around at their children and they say, what happened here? This is not what I thought. This is not how I planned to raise my kids. What happened? Where did they go wrong? Where did I go wrong? And a person looks around and begins to wonder, Hashem, how is this happening to my family? They're going off the derech. They're not carrying the legacy of Torah and mitzvahs the way I would want them to carry them. Zok de Baal HaGoda. Baruch four times. Baruch Hamokim. Baruch Hu. Baruch Shanos and Tertel Liyam Yisrael. Baruch Hu. Every child is a blessing. Don't give up on anyone. No matter how far a child has strayed, hold on to them. Don't give up. Because every child is a blessing. That's what we say, Baruch, four times. That's why we sing it. Don't give up on any child. The future of Klal Yisrael is the children. And if they had somebody that validated them and made them feel special, and that's why they went off the derech, you validate them. You make them feel special. You can bring them back. There's no such thing as hope lost when we're dealing with a child. That's why we say Baruch Hamokim, and that's why we say it four times. And I'll tell you something amazing. And I want every parent and every grandparent and every future parent to know this. This is such an important lesson that the Heilige Klal Yaakov teaches us. Listen to the pasuk that Yaakov Avinu is talking to his son Yosef when he switched the hands, right? We all know the story with Ephraim and Menashe. Again, Bereishis Memches Pasuk Yutes. Vayimoyin Aviv. The father didn't want to listen to his son Yosef. He said, Yadati b'ni Yadati, don't worry, I know what I'm doing. Gam hu yeh la'om, v'gam hu yigdol. Menashe is also going to be a great person. Don't worry. V'ulam achiv akotan, but his small brother, Yigdal Mimeno. Ephraim is going to be greater. That's why I'm putting my right hand on Ephraim. Listen to what the Klal Yochid does with these words. And he says that this is something Hamaskilim Yovinu, intelligent people, will understand, that there's a deep message here. What does it mean, Ulam Achiv HaKotan, the little one? And he writes like this, so beautiful and so inspirational. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu Boicher B'Yoyser B'Ktanim. Hashem, many times in a family, picks out that child that you think has a deficit, that you think has something wrong with him. V'chol Odom Sheyesh B'Yitzad Katnos. Any child that has something that might be inferior with him, Oz B'Yoyser, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magbiyoy, Hashem lifts him up and he becomes the leader. All of us, think back to your high school years. Forget the hairdos and the hairstyles. Forget that. But think back. Those kids that you thought were going to be the leaders really were the leaders? It's not true. Those kids, if you think back, that were sitting in the back, or nobody thought anything was going to be with them, all of a sudden, how they prospered. They became wonderful people. They became leaders in Klal Yisrael. How in the world did that happen? You know how it happened? Because somebody had trust and faith in them. And most people thought they were ketanim. They were nothing. They had a deficit. That's what he's telling us. That's what the Klal Yochid says. You never know where the nachas comes from. That kid who couldn't learn a word, he becomes a multimillionaire, and he's building yeshivas and building Beis Yaakovs and doing everything for Klal Yisrael. Yisachar and Zvulun. Everybody has to be a Yisachar. What does that say? The Zvuluns are the ones that are holding up all the Yisachars. That's great. So just because a child wasn't a genius, that's not a reason to give up on the child. You validate the child, you make him feel special. Ulam Achiv HaKotan, people thought, the principal thought, ah, this is a kid who's nothing. And now he's covering his payroll. Right? All of a sudden, things are different. Because Hashem picks out those kids that you think are small. That's what we look at Haggadah. Baruch, say it four times. And know your nephew or your niece or your second cousin or whatever. Don't give up on any of them. Never, ever give up on any child in Klal Yisrael. I want to tell you a very personal story. Again, that just struck me very, very personally, and I think has a great lesson. As I told you, my father passed away when I was only 21. And some of you who know me personally know that I had the schus to be very close to the Maggid of Yerushalayim, Rav Shalom Shradron. My father befriended him the first time he came to America, and that's how I got to know him, and that's how all the Maggid books eventually came to be written. But after my father passed away, 2 years later, the Maggid came from Yerushalayim, and he was at our Seder table. And at that night, that particular year, the first Seder was Matzah Shabbos, Saturday night. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, of course, they only make one Seder. So Rav Shalom Shradron was going to celebrate one Seder. We were going to have a Seder Saturday night and Sunday night, but his was only Saturday night. Now, when the first Seder comes out Matzah Shabbos, it always starts very, very late. Because you can't make all the preparations, the charoses and the morar and the lettuce and everything that you want to set up and the kaira, you can't start doing it until after the time of Matzah Shabbos, after Shabbos. You can't prepare on Shabbos for Matzah Shabbos. So the Seder started very late. So we're sitting, this was in my mother's house. I'm sitting at the head of the table together with Rav Shalom Shradron, and I'm running the Seder, and I see that things started late and are moving very slowly. Why? Because there were many grandchildren at the table. And today, the teachers prepare the children in such an incredible way. You open up the Haggadah, the blood is flying, you know, the frogs are jumping, you know, the animals are going, it's like unbelievable, it's raining, it's amazing. I don't know when they start preparing with these kids, probably Hanukkah time, I don't know what they do. But whatever it is, every one of them wants to tell all the Divrei Torah and they want to sing all their songs. I mean, that's what they're waiting for, right? How many of us have heard Manashtana 16 times in Spanish and, you know, and in every other language that the kids learn, right? Heaven help you if your teacher comes from Spain and she's got to teach the kids, you know, in Spanish, how to say Manashtana, whatever. So now I start telling my mother, you know, I said it in English. I figured Rav Shalom wouldn't understand. I said, Mom, we got to rush. Rav Shalom told me he never ate the Afikoman after Chatzais. We're not going to make it. All of a sudden I get a poke in my side. And he says to me in Yiddish, Al Zachnit, don't rush. I said, Rav Shalom, Afikoman, ich hatte gesagt, Al Zachnit, don't rush. Okay, fine. So they're singing and they're saying everything. Now comes the meal. No, I don't have to tell you. A meal on Pesach, you know, Kanai Nahara, a lot of people to feed, and it's taking very long, and I'm looking at my clock. So this time I didn't say anything. I just motioned to my mother, you know, like, we got to hurry. Again, a poke on my side. And he says to me, Ich hatte gesagt, Eil Zachnit, don't rush. Shalom, Ich hatte gesagt, Eil Zachnit. Fine. Sure enough, we finish way after Chatzais, and he eats the Afikoman after Chatzais, and I felt terrible. And the reason that I felt terrible was because I knew very well that he once told me that ever since he was a child, he never missed having the Afikoman before Chatzais. So after the Seder, we're sitting saying Shir Hashirim. It's a beautiful minig after the Seder, if you still have your head screwed on straight, you know, from the Dalet Kaiseis, that you should say Shir Hashirim, because that's the love of Hashem to the Jewish nation. Shir Hashirim, of course, is only a parable. And so many people say Shir Hashirim, and I was sitting saying Shir Hashirim with Rav Shalom Shradron. And in the middle, I said, Rav Shalom, I just want to apologize. He said, what are you apologizing? I said, you once told me that you never ate the Afikoman after Chatzais, and tonight, because of my family, you did it after Chatzais. And he says to me, Favos Vashtestunit, why don't you understand? I said, why don't I understand what? He says, where are your priorities? I said, what do you mean? He said, your mother's an almana. Your mother's a widow. What does she live for? She lives a whole year. The children should come in from out of town. The children should be at the Seder table. The grandchildren should be. They should sing. They should say all their things. If I would rush the Seder because I have to eat the Afikoman before Chatzais and take away the joy that she has been waiting for, that's being metzair, being pain and almana. If you pain an almana, you're over a deraisa. Eating the Afikoman before Chatzais is only a derabanan. Imagine that. Who would think of that? How many of us are going to have almanas at our table? Whether it's a mother, a grandmother, an aunt. What about the sensitivity to these people? What an unbelievable lesson I learned at the Seder. We need priorities. The respect that we have for parents and grandparents, especially grandparents who are living alone, and this is their whole life. It's their whole nachas. You have to make sure that they get whatever they deserve, whatever they've been waiting for. That's what the priority is all about. So what time do we have? Rabbi, doesn't anybody want to clean up for Pesach or something? You can tell everybody you're here for Pesach, right? So. Okay, so let me tell you two more things, and then we'll end with a great story. I heard this story from the Rebbe himself, who this happened to. Many, many years ago, there was a great tzaddik, the Skolena Rebbe, Rebbe Eliezer Zisha, Portugal. He was such a tzaddik, he was such a kind, concerned person. He lived in Romania. And during the war, him and his wife, they harbored many, many young men and young women so that they shouldn't have to go to the army and they should be able to be saved for Yiddishkeit. Somebody once told me, Skolena Chassid told me that they once made a cheshbon of how many people were in his house during the war, over 400 kids. Not obviously at the same time, but over the period of the war, that they fed and clothed and took care of while they were being protected. But right after the war, many of them were able to go back to some of the towns in Romania. And the Skolena Rebbe was able to find that there was a chassid who was able to get some wheat and some flour, and they were able to make a few matzahs. Now, many people had gotten out of the war, and they were in this small town, and the Rebbe was making matzahs, and any choshev a Rebbe that was in that town, any Hasidish Rebbe, he'd make sure that they got three matzahs for the Seder. So there was a man by the name of the Seret Vishnitzer Rebbe. His name was Rav Baruch Hagar, and he had a 10-year-old son, Rav Moshe Hagar. Rav Moshe is the one who told me the story. Rav Moshe, of course, eventually became the Seret Vishnitzer Rebbe in Haifa, and he told me the story when, of course, he was an elderly man. But this story happens when he was 10 years old. His father says to him, "I hear the Shkolena Rebbe is giving out matzahs. Go get matzahs for me, please." So he comes to the Shkolena Rebbe, and he says, "My name is Moshe Hagar. My father is the Seret Vishnitzer Rebbe. And he heard that the Shkolena Rebbe is giving out matzahs. Please, can we have some matzahs?" He said, "Your father is such a choshev, a Talmud Chacham, such a wonderful person. Here's three matzahs." He says, "No, I can't accept three. I need six." He said, "What do you mean you need six?" He said, "My father said I can't leave until you give me six matzahs." He said, "What do you mean I can't give you six matzahs? You know how many people I'm trying to help here to give matzahs? We have very few. How could I give you six?" He said, "Listen, I don't know. It's Kibbutz Avaim. My father said I cannot leave the house until the Rebbe gives me six matzahs." So the Shkolena Rebbe was stuck between a rock and a hard place. And he said, "Listen, your father's a tzaddik. I'm going to do what he wants. Here's six matzahs." And he gave him from the sixth best matzahs that he had. Fine. A few hours before Yontif, Moshe Hagar tells me, his father sends him back with three matzahs. And he comes to the Shkolena Rebbe, and he says, "Here, my father said I should give you back these matzahs." He says, "You're making fun of me? You told me you needed six matzahs? I gave you the best six matzahs that I had? And now you're giving me back three of them? Why did you take them in the first place?" So Moshe Hagar, the 10-year-old boy, said, "My father said I should tell you that he knows that you're such a great tzaddik, that you probably gave everybody the best matzahs and you kept very few for yourself. So he knew you were going to give me the best. So he took an extra three, so I should give it to you right before the Seder, so you'll have three of the best for your own Seder." And those are the three that he used for the Seder. That's greatness. When you're not thinking about yourself, even in difficult times. So I want to tell you one light little story, and then I'll tell you something that really affected me as a child, of a lesson that my father taught me. Rav Shlomo Shvadron told this adorable story. Now, by the way, I have this in an animated way. We're selling it outside. It's called Living Lessons. This story is absolutely adorable, the way they animated this story. Just incredible. What happened was that this was in Yerushalayim, and the Chosson got married a week before Yontif, and he was a Chassidish guy, he wore a shtreimel, and he came to the Seder, to his in-laws. That's how it usually is. The first Seder after the marriage usually is by the wife's parents. Again, they had only one Seder, and they had the Manishtan and the Abadamayinu, and all the kids were saying everything, and then in the middle of the meal, this Chosson is eating his soup, and he sees a wheat kernel in his soup. Now, how in the world can there be a wheat kernel in his soup? That's chametz. Now, he shouldn't have said anything, but he did say something. He lost himself, and he said, "What kind of house is this?" You know, like in front of his new mother-in-law, you can imagine, right? And he said, "Wow, chametz, you know, in the soup." It was very bad. The next morning, they come to shul. Rav Shmuel Salant is the Rav, and the Chosson walks in with his father. Rav Shmuel Salant takes a look at this Chosson, and he knows this is bad news. And he says to the father, "What's going on? Look at the Chosson's face. What happened?" And he tells him, "Last night it was terrible. You know, everybody was eating at the table and he found a wheat kernel in his soup. And he said something, maybe he shouldn't have said it." Rav Shmuel Salant says, "Come with me right now outside the shul. You, your son-in-law," and he calls the gabbai, "Bring me a shmata, bring me a rag. We got to go outside. Go out, we're coming out into the street." They all come out the street. They don't know what he's doing. Rav Shmuel Salant says to the Chosson, "Give me your shtreimel." Takes the shtreimel off his head, takes the rag, he wipes out the top of the shtreimel, and three wheat kernels come flying out of there. And nobody can believe it. And Rav Shmuel Salant explained. He said, you know where they came from? Because in Eretz Yisrael, we throw candies here in America at a Chosson. They don't throw candies, they throw wheat kernels. because that's a sign of growth. So the week before, by the Oifrof, he was wearing his shtreimel, and everybody was throwing wheat kernels. So Rav Shalom Shradron said, from here we learn a great lesson. Before you accuse somebody else, you better check your own shtreimel. I think that's a great lesson. I think that's a great lesson in life. Many times, you know, you accuse somebody else of causing a difficulty and you're the one who's the cause of it. But I just want to tell you this thing, and then we'll end with a great story. I remember as a child, my father always telling us this Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Tes Zayin. And that is the mitzvah, Shaloi Lishbar Etzem Min HaPesach, that you should not break the bone of the Korban Pesach. You're not supposed to suck out a bone, the marrow of a chicken bone or any bone on Yontif, on Pesach. Why? Because you're not supposed to do that by the Korban Pesach. And the Sefer HaChinuch asks a very interesting question. He says, why do we have to do all these things that we do? We break and we dip and we drink wine. Why don't we just put up a big sign, Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim? Why do we have to go through all the motions of all the things that we do? The whole Seder is only doing things, sandwich with the matzah, with the lettuce, without the lettuce, with the charoises, without the charoises. What are we doing all these things? Just put up a big sign in neon lights. You know, get an app, Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim, let it flash, right? Until Erev Pesach. But my father taught us this Sefer HaChinuch. Ki ha'odom nifal kefi pu'uloisav. A person behaves according to his own actions. And he writes like this. V'libay v'chol machshavoisav. A person's heart and a person's mind. Tomid achar maisav shu'u oisavahem. When you get accustomed to doing certain things, you become that way. The mashal my father always used to give was, if you have somebody that has to be an executioner, he's got to get rid of the bad people. But that's his job. He's going to become a miserable wretch. But if you train a child to always do chesed and do wonderful things, that child is going to become a baal chesed. And that's what we have to get our children to do and ourselves to do. Do good things, and the more good things you do, the better person you become. It's not that you become a good person and you do good things, just the opposite. Train children, train yourself. Odom nifal kefi pu'uloisav. A person behaves and becomes according to the acts that he does. Encourage your children to be involved in Tom Chai Shabbos. Encourage your children to pack packages. Let them do things for people in the community. Somebody had a baby, help them bake a cake for it, bring food for the shalms, or whatever it is. Do good things. And the more good things that you teach children to do, the better they become. So I just want to end just with this beautiful, beautiful story. In Bergen-Belsen, the Blujewa Rebbe was there, and it was a few days before Pesach. And they got a little bit of flour, and they were able to make matzahs. And the shaila became, they had very few matzahs, who should they give it to? Should they give it to the adults, who are mechuyev in the mitzvah of Pesach? Or should they give it to the children, for chinuch? And the Blujewa Rebbe paskind that they should give it to the adults, because they were mechuyev in the mitzvahs. That's how everybody understood it was going to be, until the day before Yontif, a woman who was an almana, her husband already had been killed, and she was taking care of a nephew and a niece. And she went over to the Blujewa Rebbe and she said, Rebbe, I hope you don't mind, but I would like to say something. Please, if the Rebbe would forgive me. He said, you could say anything. What do you want to say? She said again, please forgive me. I beg to differ with the Rebbe. The Rebbe said that they should give the adults the matzah, but I feel they should give the children. Because we don't know who's going to survive Bergen-Belsen. If the adults will survive, next year they'll know what matzah is and what a seder is because they saw it in the past. But if these children are not given matzah and don't become part of the seder, if they are the ones who survive, they won't know what to do next year. They won't know what the importance of matzah is all about. The Rebbe listened to her. He changed his mind. They gave the matzahs to the little kids. And after the war, he married her. This was his second wife. Could you believe it? His wife had already passed away. And this is the wife he married. And I think that that's the final lesson that we have to remember tonight. The final lesson is that the future of Klal Yisrael is our children. When Moshe Rabbeinu was asked, was told by Paro that he could take out the men, that's not what he said. That's not what he wanted. I don't want the adults only. We're going to go out with the children and the adults. And he mentioned the children first. That's what he said. The children, because they are the future of Klal Yisrael. We're going out with our sons and our daughters. And that's where we have to concentrate all our efforts. Yom Tov is a time to relax and to be happy. There's no question about it. But make sure that you give over to your children what Yom Tov is all about. And you know why? Because Malachi tells us at the end of Malachi, I'm going to send Eliyahu HaNavi before that great day, V'heshiv Lev Oveis Al Bonim. When he's going to see, Rashi says, Al Yedei Bonim, through the holy children, the parents, and all their friends, will be inspired by the young children. And that's when Eliyahu HaNavi will see what kind of great generation it is. I have no doubt that in Shemayim, David is looking down with us, together with Eliyahu HaNavi, and smiling that because of David Rottenstreich, all of us have come together here tonight to learn about Geula, to learn about Betochen, to learn about Achdus, and to learn about what the Yom Tov of Pesach is all about. V'heshiv Lev Oveis Al Bonim was written for young men like David. He inspired all who knew him. He inspires all of us until this very day. David should help that this Tzemach David should taka come in our day. It's a long time in coming. And we should be reunited with all those who died al Kiddush Hashem. And this month, Nisan, should taka be the month of Geula. B'mehir v'yameinu, thank you for inviting me and thank you for listening.
TorahAnytime.com sends cameras out day and night to video and audio record the best Torah classes around. We then make them available to you for free. So what are you waiting for? Watch, listen to, and download lectures on TorahAnytime.com today.